Welcome to the Practical Employment Law Podcast, a podcast covering all aspects of American employment law. I'm your host, Mark Chumley. In today's episode of the podcast, I'm going to talk about a topic that I get a lot of questions about and that seems to be finding its way into the spotlight lately. I'm talking about training repayment agreement provisions, or so-called TRAPs. I know, it's a clunky acronym. And yes, the episode title is a reference to the Elvis song Suspicious Minds. I saw the Elvis movie recently. I didn't love it. And it didn't touch on one of my favorite pet theories about Elvis, namely, that if he had married Anne Margaret instead of Priscilla, he would probably still be alive today. Of course, he'd be 87 years old, so he'd probably be president, and there'd be fried peanut butter and banana sandwiches for everyone. Sounds awesome, but we're going to talk about employment law now. So what is a TRAP? Basically, a new employee signs an agreement, or a provision in an employment agreement, that requires them to repay a certain amount if they leave the company within a specified period of time after they have completed a training program. The company's stated motivation is usually to recover training expenses that they invest in an employee who leaves before the company can recover the value of the training. Another motivation that is often not mentioned is employee retention. Obviously, an employee who will incur a significant debt by leaving an employer has a strong motivation to stick around. Competition for employees is fierce these days, and there are companies that have identified businesses with good training programs, either in their industries or just in general, and they will try to poach trained employees to save themselves the expense of training. These companies typically have a plan in place to avoid issues with non-compete agreements. I've seen cases where companies in completely different industries take to poaching management employees from a company because of its reputation for having a great training program. In other cases, competing businesses poach trained employees but move them safely out of areas where they are restricted from working by their non-compete agreements. Frankly, these are fairly effective strategies, and there is little employers can do with regard to the non-compete agreement. This frustration is likely what has led to an upsurge in the use of TRAPs. They don't do anything to restrict the new employer's action, but they make it very uncomfortable for the employee to accept that offer that might otherwise have been enticing. As I mentioned, these agreements have become more popular in the last 5 to 10 years, and have more recently been widely reported in the media. But are they enforceable? Well, the answer is the same as every legal answer, it depends. But they have been enforced, and I'll give you a couple of examples. In USS Pasco Industries v. Floyd, an employee voluntarily enrolled in a 3-year employer-sponsored educational program. He agreed in writing that if he quit his job within 30 months of completing the program, he would reimburse his employer a prorated portion of program costs. Specifically, he would owe $1,000 for each month, with the total reducing by $1,000 per month of continued employment. 2 months after completing the program, the employee went to work for another employer. When he refused to reimburse his former employer, the company sued for breach of contract and unjust enrichment. The employee countersued, asserting the reimbursement agreement was unenforceable and his employer had violated the Fair Labor Standards Act and other statutory provisions in seeking reimbursement. Now, this program was for training as a maintenance technical electrical worker. Ultimately, the employer won the case and recovered $28,000. In Sanders v. Futurecom Limited, an employer successfully enforced an agreement in an offer letter that the employee was required to reimburse it for training costs if he left the company within 1 year of completing training. The employee argued that the repayment provision of the offer letter was not part of his employment contract, but the court disagreed and awarded the employer $38,000 in damages and $34,000 in attorney's fees. Now, courts have gone the other way on these cases as well. There was a high-profile case several years ago in Los Angeles that denied the claims of the Los Angeles Police Department for recovery of training expenses against departing police officers who had signed TRAPs. There is also a pending case in Illinois by former employees of Edward R. Jones who are suing over a training repayment agreement that required them to repay $75,000 if they left the company for any reason within their first 3 years on the job. Trainees earned their FINRA Series 7 and Series 66 licenses, but there are claims that the actual cost to take the FINRA exam prep classes is really only about $1,000. So, should your business be using TRAPs, and if so, how should they be used? It's a complicated question, but here are some thoughts. Thought number one, consider whether you really need these agreements. How much are you spending on training, and how much is poaching and turnover a problem for you? Also, if it is a problem, why is it a problem? The answers to these questions will dictate, at least initially, whether traps are a good idea for your business. Thought number two, the imposition of traps may have some negative consequences. Employees do not like these agreements for obvious reasons. Requiring these may impact your ability to recruit and retain employees, which is quite possibly the opposite outcome businesses are seeking with these agreements. Thought number three, from a litigation standpoint, you may be kicking the proverbial hornet's nest. The simple fact is that if you seek to enforce this kind of agreement, you will probably have to go to court, and the outcome is not certain. Now, I understand that in many instances, the process is the punishment, and you will send a message to other employees just by going to court. But you should consider your own resources, risk tolerance, and tolerance for being in litigation. You will almost certainly get countersued by the employee, and recently the federal government has taken an interest in these agreements and may be looking to ban or restrict their use. It's safe to say that the use of traps is not going to win you any popularity contests. Thought number four. Make sure the agreement reflects reality. Traps are often attacked because they place an unreasonable premium on the training they cover. If the cost of the training that was provided is grossly inflated, the agreement is much less likely to be enforced. That is a central argument in the Edward R. Jones case, and I would note that it has made its way into the media, and I doubt it's viewed as good publicity by the folks at Edward Jones. Thought number five, get professional help. I've talked a lot on the podcast about non-compete agreements and the importance of really developing a business strategy to go along with them. The same holds true for traps. They need to be carefully crafted and thought out. You don't want to take one you find online and put your company's name on it. You should consult with an employment attorney about the best approach to these agreements for your business, as well as any legal impediments to enforcement in your jurisdiction. This has been the Practical Employment Law Podcast. Thanks for listening. Please watch for future episodes wherever you get podcasts. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. If you would like to contact me about any aspect of the podcast, my email address is mchumley@kmklaw.com, and my full contact information is in the show notes. This podcast was created for general informational purposes only and does not constitute legal advice or a solicitation to provide legal services. Although we attempt to ensure that the podcast is complete, accurate, and up to date, we assume no responsibility for its completeness, accuracy, or timeliness. The information in this podcast is not intended to create, and listening to it does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. Listeners should not act upon this information without seeking professional legal counsel.